We'll go ahead and get started. It's almost 7 o'clock. I'll just go ahead and get started with a word of prayer. We come to you in prayer, Father. Thank you again for another day of life, another day you've blessed us with. Thank you so much for your son and for forgiving us of sins. Thank you for getting us here all safely tonight. Pray that all that we learn here tonight will be beneficial to us all, and that we'll all be able to take away the things we need to do and things we can take away from. Help us to be shining lights in this world. And again, forgive us for our sins, and thank you for your son. It's in his name we pray. Amen. So tonight I have Leviticus chapter 23. I may have made a mistake preparing this lesson, as I think I was only supposed to do verses 26 through 44, but I accidentally did the whole chapter. So I'll be going as fast as I can with that. This was definitely a very challenging chapter for me. So if I misteach anything, please speak up and stop me. There's just a lot of factual points in it. Feel free to interrupt me and add in your comments as well at any point. I'm sure there's a lot. I'm sure there's some of you out there that know this chapter far better than me. So as I kind of mentioned, this is supposed to be a 15-minute class. After I go, Connor will have his chapter. So I'll do my best to keep it within 15 minutes. So with that said, we'll go ahead and get started. So Leviticus chapter 23 is the feasts of the Lord. These are the feasts, seven feasts in order. We have the Passover, unleavened bread, the feasts of first fruits, the feasts of weeks, the feasts of trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. The first four feasts occur in the season of spring. These feasts also foreshadow Jesus' first coming, which today has happened. Back then, during this time, has not happened yet. The last three feasts land in the fall season, as you can see up there in orange, on the Hebrew month of Tishri. These also foreshadow Jesus' second coming, which today has yet to happen. For this slide, I don't have any particular verses for how these feasts are foreshadowing, but as we go on in the class, the scripture will naturally point to the New Testament and today and vice versa. So let's go ahead and open our Bibles and go to Leviticus chapter 23, and we'll begin reading. So we'll just start with verse 1 through 3, the Sabbath. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, The feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. The Sabbath is not included in the list of feasts, as the Sabbath is a day set apart and designed by God for gathering and solemn rest. Moses will speak to the children of Israel, the seven feasts that the Lord designed. The people will observe and celebrate. These feasts are rich with symbolism designed by God, each of them created specifically with a purpose and message. Verse 3 repeats the fourth commandment from the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. It commands not only a seventh day of rest, but also 6 days of work. We'll go ahead and continue to the Passover, verses 4 through 5. These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover, and on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall have no customary work on it, or you shall do no customary work on it. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. This is the first feast, and this is a foundation for the other feasts. One verse ahead, as I already kind of read, it begins the second feast, which is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. After the reminder of the Sabbath, people are now commanded to observe and celebrate at their appointed times. On the Jewish ceremonial calendar, the first month was known as Nisan. Passover was held on the 14th of Nisan each year. Twilight was the end of one day and the beginning of a new day. The first Passover we see is in Exodus chapter 12, when Israel was enslaved in Egypt. God worked through Moses to perform a series of plagues upon Egypt to release his people. The final plague was the death of the firstborn. The people of Israel put the blood of the sacrificed lamb on the top and the sides of the doorways to be spared. When the angel came and saw the blood on the doorway, it would pass over, as it was the blood of the lamb. All of the lamb sacrificed in Egypt pointed to the one true Lamb of God. And I already read verses 6 through 8. The unleavened bread. This feast was to last for 7 days. On the first and seventh day, there was to be a time of meeting or holy convocation. In the preparation for this meeting, all leavened products were to be removed from the household, which we do see in Exodus chapter 12, verses 14 through 20. Combining this feast with Passover makes this an 8-day celebration. No works was to be done on the specified holy days. The Feast of Unleavened Bread was originally established at the first Passover. We see in Exodus chapter 12, verses 14 through 20. This is one of the three feasts at which God commanded all men of Israel to gather before him yearly. And that's seen in Exodus chapter 23, verse 17. For the first Passover, the unleavened bread following was it was practically necessary, or is a necessity. After the first Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a testimony throughout the generations. Let's go ahead and continue reading. We'll do verses 9 through 14. The Feast of First Fruits. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come out into the land which I give you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priests. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it, and you shall offer on that day, when you wave that sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish, as a burnt offering to the Lord. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil, offering made with fire to the Lord for a sweet aroma, and its drink offering shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread nor parched grain nor fresh grain until the same day that you have been brought an offering to your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings." This Feast of First Fruits starts on the second day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In verse 10 there, where it says, "When you come into the land which I give you," the Feast of Fruits was also called the Feast of Harvest in Exodus chapter 23, verse 16. It was not to be observed until Israel came into the land of Canaan. The command for the feast was a promise that they would in fact come into the land and possess it. God said, "When you come into the land," or God said, "When you come into the land," not "if you come into the land." It's a promise. This was also a celebration of the coming harvest and giving thanks. They had to dedicate the first ripened stalks of grain to God. And a sheaf is a bundle of grain stalks, if you didn't know. The offering of first fruits was to be celebrated on the day after the Sabbath that ended Passover and began the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This means that the first three feasts of Israel's calendar all happened close together over a period of 9 days. The grain from the new harvest was not eaten until thanks had been given and offerings made for the new harvest. We'll go ahead and continue to verses 15 through 22. Feast of Weeks. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Lord. You shall bring from your dwellings two wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour, and they shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Lord, and you shall offer with bread 7 lambs of the first year without blemish, 1 young bull and 2 rams. They shall be as burnt offerings to the Lord with their grain offerings and their drink offerings, an offering made by fire with a sweet aroma to the Lord. Then you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats as a skin offering and 2 male lambs of the first year as sacrifice of a peace of offering. The priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Lord with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priests, and you shall proclaim on that same day that it is a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your fields when you reap, nor you gather any gleanings from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Fifty days after the Feast of First Fruits, at the completion of the wheat harvest, Israel was to celebrate the Feast of Weeks by bringing a new grain offering to the Lord and offer specific sacrifices. This is also called the Feast of Ingathering in Exodus chapter 23, verse 16, and Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, verse 1, and Acts chapter 20, verse 16. The name Pentecost means 50th day in Greek. This name is used in the New Testament because the feast was celebrated 50 days after the Feast of Unleavened Bread. When celebrating the Feast of Weeks, 2 loaves of bread were waved before the Lord, and remarkably, these 2 loaves were to be baked with leaven. This was very unusual. Generally speaking, Israel was forbidden from offering any kind of leaven or yeast with the blood offering. And we see this in Exodus chapter 23, verse 18, and chapter 34, verse 25. There was a special symbolic message from God in the command to wave 2 leavened loaves of bread before him at the Feast of Weeks, and then to offer those loaves with the burnt offerings. After the loaves of leavened bread were waved before the Lord, they were offered on the altar along with the animal sacrifices as a burnt offering, along with the grain offering and drink offerings. Let's go ahead and continue to the Feast of Trumpets. And we'll be reading just verse 23 through 25. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel in the 7th month, on the 1st day of the month. You shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." So basically, on the first day of the month, God called for a special day of Sabbath rest and a ceremonial blowing of the trumpets. And this is the first mention of this feast in the Bible, for the Feast of Trumpets. On this day of special rest, trumpets were blown to gather together God's people for a holy convocation, and there was also an offering made by fire to the Lord. Now let's go ahead and move to the Day of Atonement. And we'll read verses 26 through 32. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Also the 10th day of this 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. And you shall do no work on that same day, for it is the Day of Atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. For any person who is not afflicted in souls on that same day shall be cut off from his people. And any person who does not work, any person who does any work on that same day, the person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls. On the ninth day of the month at evening, from evening to evening, you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So the atonement, or covering, another word for it. Atonement is for previous year's sins. That atonement or sacrifice was the blood sacrifice of an innocent animal, as recorded in Leviticus chapter 17, verse 11. On the 10th day of the 7th month, the people gathered again for a holy convocation, but this was not a celebration feast, but a day to afflict your souls in a humble recognition of sin and the need for atonement. The priestly sacrifices and ceremonies for the Day of Atonement were described in Leviticus chapter 16. Here the emphasis is on what the individual Israelite did on that day. Now, in verse 29, where it says, "Any person who is not afflicted in soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people," this is a strong statement of the command and punishment for disobedience. It's unique among these instructions for the feast. In the strongest terms, God wanted his people to use this as a day of humble repentance and to cease from their own work. While the high priest worked hard to make the sacrifice that would bring atonement to the people of God. In verse 32, it says, "And you shall afflict your souls." You know, this command was first made in Leviticus chapter 16, verse 29. And both there and here, we have no specific description of what it meant to afflict your souls. We can kind of get a general idea. This has been interpreted as fasting for the entire day and to make the day of solemn reflection over one's sin and life over the previous year. It was also a day of rest. And you also cannot do any work on that day. Almost sounds like a Sunday, kind of how we do the Lord's Supper in a way. Now let's take a look at the seventh and last feast, the Feast of Tabernacles. And we'll finish up the chapter and read verses 33 through 34, or 44. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of the Tabernacles, for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering, a grain offering, a sacrifice, and drink offerings, everything on its day, besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, besides all your free will offerings, which you give to the Lord. Also on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day, there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day, a Sabbath rest. And you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. You shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You should dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." So Moses declared to the children of Israel all the feasts of the Lord. On the 15th day of the Jewish month, Tishri, on the Jewish ceremonial calendar, was the Feast of Tabernacles. It lasted for 7 days and one additional day. We see that this week was also an appropriate time for people to bring their personal gifts, vows, and freewill offerings to the Lord. The Feast of Tabernacles began and ended a holy convocation. Each of those days was a day of rest. Sacrifices were held throughout the week, including a burnt offering, a grain offering, and a drink offerings. The Feast of Tabernacles began and ended in rest. This was definitely a time of celebration, rest, and refreshment. This was the only feast of the seven which rejoicing was commanded. This was to be a happy celebration of God's goodness and provision. In verse 42, we see it says, "You shall dwell in booths for 7 days." During the Feast of Tabernacles, Israelite families were to camp out in shelters made out of the branches of palm trees and boughs of leafy trees. And with all that said, that's my whole rundown of chapter 23. It was a lot of information. So if anyone has anything they want to add, now would be your time. But that's about all I have prepared. Do you have anything, Steve? Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kent. I don't see you. He's working his way up there, but I think he did cover a little bit of what I was supposed to, so thankful for that. Turn over to chapter 25, and we'll talk about a couple of the two particular years that are special. The first one we'll get right into is the seventh year Sabbath. So every 7 years there's a Sabbath year. And I'll pick up reading in chapter 25, verse 1. "And the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come to the land which I gave you, then the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather its fruit. But in the seventh year, there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. What grows of its own accord of your harvest you shall not reap, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine, for it is a year of rest for the land. And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you, for you, your male and female servants, your hired man, and the stranger who dwells with you. For your livestock and the beasts that are in your land, all its produce shall be your food." So, the first idea, or the first mention of the land having a Sabbath, was back in Exodus 23, and it's just mentioned for two brief verses. Exodus 23, verse 10, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove." So the idea of a Sabbath is not new, but this was... this Sabbath year is for the purpose of the land, for the land to participate in a Sabbath. And they weren't to tend to the fields, they weren't to harvest. So in my mind, I'm like, how could they live? How could they sustain like that? But we'll read later in the chapter that there's provisions made for this, but... I don't think there's any mention of explicitly in the Bible that they observed this ever, but I did find some interesting comments about the Sabbath and the land enjoying a Sabbath in other parts of the Bible. But in chapter 26 and verse 34, Chapter 26, verse 34 of Leviticus, it says, "Then the land shall enjoy its Sabbath," and this is in the context of if you do not obey God, if you walk contrary to God, then the land shall enjoy its Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate and you are in your enemy's land. Then the land shall rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, for the time it did not rest on your Sabbaths when you dwelt in it. And then I read in 2 Chronicles, actually I'll just turn there. And 2 Chronicles, chapter 36. After the fall of Jerusalem, and I'm going to pick up the reading in verse 20. "And those who escaped from the sword, he carried away to Babylon, where they became servants to him and his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. As long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years." So I thought that was interesting. Like, I couldn't find anywhere explicitly where it said the people, you know, observed a Sabbath year, a sabbatical year. But you do find mention that they, under Babylonian captivity, 70 years or seven Sabbaths were fulfilled during that time where the land was desolate. So obviously, I think this year, throughout that whole year, you'd be mindful of how much God provides for you through the land. And you would realize quickly that everything belongs to God. And I think in Exodus 23, where it says, you know, it doesn't mention in Leviticus 25 all the purposes of this, but you can see God's wisdom and instilling such a year for the land's purpose, you know, the nutrients returning to the land. But it also made mention of the poor being able to eat, which I found really interesting. And, you know, throughout our study so far, we're just like, we don't think that we can relate to the people of Israel, you know, or maybe I don't. But this makes them relatable, you know, even though they had land that they're probably stockpiling it, and people are still going hungry, and even though they're, you know, agricultural and things like that. So you do see a little. There's so much wisdom and God's design to benefit everybody. So that's the seventh year Sabbath. Any questions or comments on that? Any interesting notes? Anybody? Yeah.
So basically, the Jewish people couldn't partake of the stuff from their land. But the poor people could.
Well, the way I took it is that you couldn't harvest it, stockpile it, store it for your family, but it doesn't mention that you could never eat off of it. I think...
Well, it specifically says you can eat whatever comes up.
The Sabbath produce could be eaten. So I take it that, yeah, if you were poor or in poverty, then you would just eat off the land, or... Even if you were well off, you could do the same. But I actually will turn, I'll skip to verse 18 of this chapter, and you'll see a little interesting note. So in verse 18, it says, "You shall observe my statutes and keep my judgments and perform them, and you will dwell in the land in safety. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and dwell there in safety. And if you say, 'What shall we eat in the seventh year, since we shall not sow nor gather in our produce?' then I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year, and it will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. And you shall sow in the eighth year and eat old produce until the ninth year. Until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest." So here you can see that they would have enough provisions during that seventh year Sabbath to not even eat off the land if they needed. But with that being said, I mean, yeah, it doesn't make mention that you couldn't eat from your crops or anything, but maybe.
You weren't to plant.
Yeah, but the yield, there was a natural yield, I guess.
Well, God said it's going to take care of it.
Exactly,
He's
yeah.
He's going to make sure it happens. So if you have faith in the Lord, then you're going to follow His direction.
Yeah.
And if you don't follow His direction.
Yeah, so that's another way to kind of epitomize or I give another meaning to this, is that they had to put their trust and faith in God. They had to recognize that this was, everything was His. Yeah, imagine that kind of trust. You know, it sounds nice for all of us, like that would be like a vacation or something like that, but to them it was their livelihoods, it was their pride, it was their wealth.
Well, God gave it all to them in the beginning. They need to go in.
Yeah, they're still in.
The farms were there for them to take over.
Yeah. That's a good point. And it's also interesting to note that, you know, we're talking about things that are going to be taking place in the Promised Land in the future. They're still in the wilderness of Sinai right now. It's interesting that, you know, God spoke to them back in Exodus, and we're still at the same place and reiterating some of the same messages that they heard previously. But I'm going to proceed with the chapter, unless there's any other comments. All right. We're going to talk about the year of Jubilee now. So back to chapter 25 of Leviticus, verse 8. And you shall count seven Sabbaths of years for yourself, seven times 7 years, and the time of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be to you 49 years. Then you shall cause the trumpet of the Jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the seventh month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall make the trumpet to sound throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. And each of you shall return to his possession, and each of you shall return to his family. That 50th year shall be a jubilee to you. In it shall neither sow nor reap what grows of its own accord, nor gather the grapes of your untended vine. For it is the Jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat its produce from the field. In this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his possession. And if you sell anything to your neighbor or buy from the neighbor's hand, you shall not oppress one another. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy from your neighbor, and according to the number of years of crops, he shall sell to you. According to the multitude of years, you shall increase its price, and according to the fewer number of years, you shall diminish its price. For he sells to you according to the number of the years of the crops. Therefore, you shall not oppress one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. So this was not as common as a seventh year Sabbath. This is every 50 years. The year of Jubilee was to be observed. So after the seventh Sabbath's time, which is 49 years, so you have a Sabbath year, which would be the 49th year. And then during that year, on the Day of Atonement, you blow the trumpet to signal the upcoming Jubilee year. At least that's how I understood it. And that Jubilee year would also be another year without work, without sowing and reaping and harvesting. But there was much more going on than that also. So it was supposed to be a consecrated year, the whole year, holy. And that's when everybody would also return to their possessions. But in verse 10, it does say, you shall proclaim liberty throughout all the land to all its inhabitants. So firstly, captives, slaves would be free at that point. It doesn't say in that language, but to proclaim liberty throughout all the land, I think that's what it's implying.
I think it only applied to Jewish slaves. Those who were not Jewish, you could keep them. But the Jewish slaves, you had to redeem them. You had to release them.
So that's interesting, because I'm thinking, what slaves did the Jewish people, or could they enslave? I know they, had battles that God helped them win, against like the Amaleks and stuff like that. You think they took slaves during those types of battles? And that's who we're referring to, maybe? Or, pardon me, you were talking about Jewish slaves. Like among each other, maybe?
They didn't have the means to sustain their life. They didn't enslave themselves. And if they decided in the year Jubilee that they wanted to stay where they were, their master took an awl and put a hole in their ear, punched a hole in their ear.
Pierced their ear.
But yeah, they took all kinds of captives. I mean, you read about the Jews and the battles that they had lots of captives.
Yeah, that's how it was back in their times and when they fought war. That's part of the spoils. That's something I didn't think about. But something that it was made mention, and that is just like goes to get contrary to all like worldly belief and wisdom, this whole year of Jubilee is like that, but to release slaves, to forgive people of their debts, is not a worldly way to think, but something, of course, that God's knowledge and wisdom surpasses all of ours. So all the slaves where you're to proclaim liberty, it shall be a jubilee for you, and each one was to return to his possession or to their allotted land. Anybody have a guess of like what the purpose for this could be? I think I have a guess myself, but so we're divided. Israel is divided by tribes. And every 50 years, you return the year of Jubilee to return back to your possessions. So I'm thinking, as far as power goes, one tribe could become stronger than another. One tribe could be more well off, or I don't know, there could be circumstances where they buy and sell land to each other. Maybe one tribe ends up with other people's allotted land.
I don't think they were allowed to sell their property outside of the tribe. If you remember the daughters, I can't remember who it was now, but one of them didn't have a son, and the daughters had any inheritance that they took, but it had to be in the tribe. Or if you think of Ruth, the story of run into the same thing. You couldn't just sell your property to anybody that you wanted to. It had to be somebody that was within the tribe.
So, all right, then back to my initial question. Does anybody have an idea of the purpose for this? Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, that's what it says in, you know, the latter verses I read. You know, you're not selling the land. You're selling, you know, the number of years of the crops. So I guess people maybe within even their own tribe could, you know, lease their land to each other. And you know, people have different there's a variance of wealth even among the tribes. So that maybe there would be a reason for somebody to lease their land to another. So that's kind of like a fail-safe in order to prevent people from going to like a habitual poverty, like a poverty you pass on by, I don't know the word for that, not by your parents, you pass it on to your kids. So yeah, that would be a reason, I would think. But yeah, it just, like I said, it goes contrary to all, you know, we think is wise and smart. But you know, God has incredible you know, plans. And let's see what else happens during this year. By tribe, and then all of the roles that they would be fulfilled, you know, in their society. That would also make sense. But yeah, you can just see, you can come up with all the ways that God, you know, God's wisdom is taking place here, even if I don't understand completely. But let's see. So all the debts were forgiven. Somebody could, you know, lease their land on the following year, and they would have it for 49 years. So it's a pretty straightforward concept, but you know, it all again is pointing back to God and his mindfulness of their people throughout their history. You know, he's their God, and he's instilling everything that he's telling them to do in them for a reason to fear him and to respect him and to have faith and to learn how to draw near to him. And those were two you know, interesting things to learn about, to read about again. Does anybody have any comments about the Year Jubilee or anything interesting they found while reading? Well, I appreciate everybody listening in the comments. That is all I have. And thank you.